In 1907, Italian composer Ferruccio Busoni wrote a bold and progressive essay arguing for the freedom of music. Titled Sketch of a New Aesthetic of Music, it advocates for the exploration of new sounds free from traditional standards.
In this essay, Busoni refers to the dynamophone, which is an early version of the modern-day synthesizer. He believes that the invention would open many doors to the future of music. He expressed that through the following quote.
What a vista of fair hopes and dreamlike fancies is thus opened for them both. Who has not dreamt that he could float on air, and firmly believed his dream to be reality? Let us take thought how music may be restored to its primitive, natural essence. Let us free it from architectonic, acoustic, and aesthetic dogmas. Let it be pure invention and sentiment, in harmonies, in forms, in tone colors. For invention and sentiment are not the prerogative of melody alone.
But when Busoni made this statement over a century ago, could he have predicted the experimental music that followed? Pieces comprising only one note, painful electronic sounds, or even total silence. When does experimentation cross the line? How far can music go and still be considered music?
And, in essence, what is music?
I'm Abai.
And I'm Patrick. And you're listening to the Radioactive Podcast.
Radioactive is a program through KOW that trains young people in the skills of radio journalism. And what you just heard was music, I think.
Yeah, I'd hope so, because, well, we made it. Abai, you want to talk a little bit about your music background?
Sure. As a child, I learned many different instruments at different times. But when I was mysteriously placed in a band during middle school, I decided that I would stick with percussion. I also produce music digitally with my computer, since I've always been interested in how modern music was made. And how about you?
I began playing piano at a young age, and after a few years, began to compose some music of my own. And although I come from a classical background, I also really enjoy electronic music, partly because of my involvement in dance. So it's evident that we're both pretty involved in music. But today, we're going to step a little bit outside of our comfort zones, and maybe yours too.
Yeah, we're going to talk about experimental music, like Frog House.
That was a catchy song called Toad's Theme by the band Totally Crossed Out. That's crossed with a K, not a C, and totally with a toad. And yes, Froghouse is an interesting experimental genre of electronic music. But today, we're going to go deeper than that, exploring songs that test the boundaries of music.
Let's start by trying to understand the buzz around experimental music and how the appeal is different from that of traditional music. First, let's hear from a classically trained musician about her experience and her views on the meaning of music. Patrick?
Yeah, so I recently interviewed my piano teacher, Ms. Yiling Huang, about her views on the subject of music and experimental music. Ms. Huang grew up in Taiwan, moved to Vienna at age 16 to study piano performance, and later received her Master of Music degree at the New England Conservatory in Boston. Now, besides teaching piano as an occupation, Ms. Huang likes to compose and has three albums in stores now. And what you're hearing right now is Ms. Huang's Somewhere in Time. Anyway, I asked her about her understanding of music and about the inspiration behind her own composition.
Music is supposed to bring some peace in the world. My music compositions are based on my life experience and what I think about life.
Music is supposed to bring some peace to the world, and her composition reflects her life experience. Interesting. I wonder if experimental musicians are similar. And how does she think all composers should approach their work?
The composer himself, they need to very important to be true to themselves, what they want to express. Once they feel they are very connected to what they want to write and to express, I think the audience can also feel the emotion and the message the composer wants to express.
Basically, any composer who wants to get across the message first needs to connect deeply with their own subject matter.
When you hear this music, does it feel like the composers are expressing their life experiences, or that they connect deeply with their music? Well, the experimental music you're listening to comes from July 23rd Sunday session at Cafe Racer. I went to go check it out. As I entered Cafe Racer, a cozy coffee spot burrowed in the university district, I was welcomed by a room filled with performers. It's a quaint place, with one wall reserved for bad art. In fact, it's called the Bad Art Wall, and it has a collection of colorful peeps glued to a frame, and a bunch of clown paintings. This art foreshadowed what the evening would entail. We were in for a show. The first musician was performing an ad-libbed guitar solo, of only one note. The singular strums filled the silent room, which made an awkward scene for outsiders. But he concluded his set by explaining his attention to the dynamics and velocity in each strum, which gave his song a whole other meaning. The acts preceding this one were just as experimental. People were encouraged to hop on stage with others and just play. This is where I met Chris. He's the partner of Jenny Asarno, one of the program's heads at Radioactive, and the drummer from the last song. He has nothing but good things to say about Cafe Racer, and even had a role in its origins.
We started this when we just, right after we had all graduated from the University of Washington. A lot of us were students in the music school.
I also asked about his musical background since I just witnessed his mastery.
Well, I started playing the drums when I was about 8 or 9 years old and took lessons through elementary school and junior high and high school and ended up studying jazz at the University of Washington, and I've played around the city ever since.
I've never heard experimental music on the radio, which raises the question, what audience is the music aimed towards? Here's Chris's response.
People come here to collaborate with one another. Like, there's no genre. People come with an open mind and want to collaborate.
After his interview, the next group of performers were setting up to take the stage. While that was going on, I decided to step outside and ask the other performers why they come to Cafe Racer.
Because I like it, because it seems like anything can happen.
The combination of people and the nature of the open setting.
I followed that up by asking them, what makes good music?
Usually something that gets stuck in my head for one reason or another, whether it's catchy or piques my interest in some other way. Everything else kind of follows from that.
I just like it. I don't know. I haven't thought about that.
Though Chris gave a more in-depth response, their passion for music was equally clear.
The music heard at the Cafe Racer Sunday sessions isn't always pleasant, and it can be a little confusing. Well, the same can sometimes be said of avant-garde electronic music.
After hearing that title, you might think that this kind of music is rather new, maybe starting in the 90s or 2000. But in reality, experimental electronic musicians have been perfecting their art under our noses since the mid-1900s.
One of these musicians is İlhan Mimaroğlu, a Turkish composer who worked at the Columbia-Princeton Electronic Music Center for nearly 30 years. There, he worked with a number of other famous experimental composers, including the likes of John Cage and Edgard Vaches.
But before we explore more of his background, let's listen to a little bit of his work. Here's Mimaroğlu's Agony from the year 1965. We'll also read you the explanation he gave to accompany this track.
The sound sources here are purely electronic, although the piece might give the impression of my having used natural sounds as well, or that its imagery calls for associations with definite or indefinite concrete objects. The extent of the transformation the medium can bring into whatever one selects as sound source is sufficient to make fanatical adherence to one or the other sound source category aesthetically futile.
Basically, he means that these sounds are abstract, and don't need to be associated with real-world objects. And yeah, it's kind of crazy. It's harsh and emotionally fierce, and it's a little confusing, but it makes more sense if you know where Mimaroğlu found his inspiration. Agony's full title is actually Agony, Visual Study No. 4 after Arshile Gorky.
In 1947, artist Arshile Gorky produced an oil painting titled Agony, and is sometimes considered his most important work. It's an abstract work, covered in red and orange, and according to a description by the Manhattan Museum of Modern Art, the blazing, impassioned scene is often understood in relation to the traumatic events of the artist's personal life, including a fire in his studio and cancer. Do you hear it? The pain? It's important to note that this piece isn't reflective of all of Mimaroğlu's music. It was specifically inspired by another artist's work. And after all, Mimaroğlu's the same man who once gave this aphorism. We composers worry so much about posterity that we fail to notice what's happening to our posterior. But the reason we chose this work is to highlight how far experimental electronic musicians were willing to go with their art. İlhan Mimaroglu is a very interesting man and artist, but today it seems his work is little known, so as we close our discussion of his work, we'll leave you with one more of his aphorisms. Abai?
You know, there really are many underappreciated composers, but being underappreciated doesn't make someone special. The world is full of them. One of the most notable aspects of Mimaroglu's work, and certainly part of its appeal, is its unpredictability. But experimental work doesn't always rely on these standards to be unique and appealing.
Take, for example, the music of Randy Gibson, the composer of a 3-hour-long work comprising only the 7D naturals on the piano. The work is called, and this is a doozy, The Four Pillars Appearing from the Equal D Under Resonating Apparitions of the Eternal Process in the Midwinter Starfield.
Is there a way we can shorten that?
Yeah, let's just call it The Four Pillars. Now, to say this piece is entirely predictable isn't exactly fair. There's actually a lot of creativity in its composition. Here's a sample, performed by pianist R. Andrew Lee.
There's actually a large amount of complexity to his work. Despite only using one note, it continues to be intriguing even after listening for a while. Like the guy with the guitar from the cafe.
Definitely. I think it's largely thanks to an unpredictable rhythm. If you played any classical piano piece like this, you'd definitely get called out for rushing. But in this case, it makes for a unique and interesting experience. And thank goodness for that, because, again, the work is 3 hours long.
Lee, the pianist himself, had some interesting things to say about this piece. He talked to the New York Times about the time when Gibson first introduced this piece to him. And he said that when Gibson described certain parts of the piece as melodic, he replied, "What do you mean by melodic? I'm only playing octaves."
You know, at first I thought Lee was throwing shade here, but in the spirit of experimental music, not being melodic doesn't seem to be a bad thing. I mean, recall the abstract electronic music we heard earlier by İlhan Mimaroglu. That isn't especially melodic either.
Music that's not melodic? That's new.
Well, don't worry. That's not even the end of the road. How about no music at all?
Wait. Him?
Yep. John Cage. This famous American composer and music theorist was a pioneer of experimental music and indeterminacy in music, which just means he leaves his work up to the interpretation of the listener. Let's listen to a little bit of his infamous work from 1952, titled 4 Minutes and 33 Seconds, and performed by German pianist Armin Fuchs. Yep, that's the piece. And it goes on for, you guessed it, 4 minutes and 33 seconds. The piece contains 3 movements. 1, tacit. 2, tacit. 3, tacit. And tacit means you don't play your instrument for that movement. So what you hear from this piece, no matter who performs it, is simply ambient noise. Armin Fuchs makes a playing gesture to signal the start of each movement, but hits no notes. Some performers use a stopwatch. Orchestras and rock bands alike perform this piece.
And although 4:33 is the most famous, it isn't the only piece of music without input by its performers. Alphonse Allais and Yves Klein both beat Cage to the punch, but still, 4:33 is quite controversial.
Yep. When I asked my piano teacher about this work, I got this response.
I would say many people would say that's not music. They would say, what's that? But if you are a person, understand the silence, you probably will hear more. So that's why I don't mind at all when there's music, some just simple note or just even D, there's a silence in between. Yeah, it doesn't need to be always so keep going, you know, in between the notes, or, you know.
Yeah, rests are definitely an important part of music. Ask any cymbalist in an orchestra. But silence for a whole piece?
Well, according to Cage, even if 4:33 is silent, no one will hear it as silence. Let's talk first about his inspiration for the piece. When Cage entered the Anechoic Music Chamber at Harvard University, a chamber meant to be soundproof, he expected to hear silence. But instead, in his own words, "I heard 2 sounds, one high and one low. When I described them to the engineer in charge, he informed me that the high one was my nervous system in operation, the low one my blood in circulation." Cage was thus inspired, realizing that silence is impossible. Well, at least on Earth he's right.
In an interview with Stephen Montague, Cage answered that 433 is his most important work because you don't need it in order to hear it. This is how he explained his reasoning. You have it all the time, and it can change your mind, making it open to things outside it. It is continually changing. In fact, and Thoreau knew this, and it's been known traditionally in India. It is the statement that music is continuous. In India, they say music is continuous. It is we who turn away. So whenever you feel in need of a little music, all you have to do is pay close attention to the sounds around you. I always think of my silent piece before I write the next piece.
And that means, for Cage at least, all sound can be music. You just need to pay attention.
So the next time you hear music that makes you question if it's really music, think about what we discussed today.
Music, at least according to some, doesn't need to be pleasant, or melodic, or filled with notes. It can be an artistic expression of emotion and thought, nevertheless. Consider, when our podcast finishes playing, that maybe we're just performing our own rendition of 433. I'm Patrick.
And I'm Abai. This is Radioactive. To hear more from the youths at Radioactive Youth Media, head over to our Facebook at Radioactive Youth Media. Also, check out our Twitter and Instagram accounts, both titled KUOW Radioactive.
Special thanks to our mentor Paul Kiefer and our editor Lila Katayev, as well as Ms. Yiling Huang and the people over at Cafe Racer.